Hello everyone, and welcome to Hydro One's virtual information session for the Chatham to Lakeshore Transmission Line project. We are live tonight with Hydro One and joined by members from the Anishinaabe First Nations listening in. During tonight's session, you will hear from Hydro One's team and have an opportunity to participate in a live Q&A session. To ask a question live this evening, simply press 3 on your phone's keypad. Once again, press 3 to ask a live question at any time during the course of the session. To view tonight's presentation, you can visit www.hydro1engagement.ca. My name is Eric, and I will be facilitating the virtual information session this evening. During this live session, we encourage you to get involved and ask questions and give your feedback by voting on our questions. Our intention is to get as many questions from you as possible this evening. You can ask a live question at any time by pressing 3 on your phone's keypad. Someone will take your name and place you in the question queue. Now again, for everyone just joining us, hello and welcome to Hydro One's virtual information session for the Chatham to Lakeshore Transmission Line project. We are live tonight with Hydro One and joined by members from the Anishinaabe First Nations listening in. To ask a live question this evening, simply press 3 on your phone's keypad. Once again, press 3 to ask a live question at any time. To view tonight's presentation, please visit www.hydro1engagement.ca. At this time, I would like to introduce Danielle Charbonneau, the Senior Manager of Indigenous Relations at Hydro One, to open up the town hall. Welcome, Danielle.
Thank you, Eric, and hello, everyone, and thank you for joining Hydro One's virtual community information session for the new Chatham to Lakeshore Line project. So my name is Danielle Charbonneau, and I'm the Senior Manager with the Indigenous Relations team here at Hydro One. So today I'm joined by my colleagues on the phone. From Hydro One, we have Sony Kanunap-Karan, Director of Project Delivery. We also have John Chadwick, he's Manager Environmental Services, Andrew Lewis, Real Estate Coordinator, and Sarah-Jane Soulier, she's Senior Advisor with the Indigenous Relations Team. So I'm going to maybe start off topic, and, you know, obviously we are holding this session remotely as it's not currently, you know, safe to gather in large numbers due to the pandemic. So before we get into the project itself, I just want to make sure everyone understand that we too are experiencing sort of the new and unique challenges before us. So once it's safe, we do intend to visit and conduct in-person sessions in your communities. So today is not a replacement for those, nonetheless. We thought it would be important to keep you all informed and, you know, open up a dialogue. So we know that some of you may be more eager to learn about the Chatham to Lakeshore Line, and we remain committed to ensuring that you have up-to-date information and understand our next steps for this important project. So we will continue to monitor the latest pandemic developments, and we certainly look forward for a safe opportunity to hold in-person sessions within your community once again. But in the meantime, so we are using this new way of engaging with you to augment our communication efforts and ensure you had an open channel to communicate with us too. So maybe first a little bit about us. So we, Hydro One, for more than 100 years, Hydro One has proudly served the homes and businesses of Southwestern Ontario. Our crews live and work across the region and personally as well as professionally invested in providing safe and reliable power to your homes and businesses. So Hydro One, as you may know, provides distribution services to 88 First Nations communities across Ontario and service an additional 17 First Nations communities in Northern Ontario through Hydro One Remotes, Inc. So the Chatham to Lakeshore Line will play a critical role in continuing this long-held tradition by unlocking economic potential and growth by increasing the amount of power available in this particular region. So by working alongside partners like the ISO, the Independent Electricity Service Operator, it's our job to make sure that the power is available where and when it's needed to support business and community growth. Our development work on this new transmission line continues, and we are committed to continuing our engagement with residents, First Nations, communities, businesses, elected officials, and all other advocates. Tonight's session will provide an opportunity to learn more about the project need, the class environmental assessment process, and consultation with First Nations communities, the proposed routes, the route selection process, and some of our key milestones and next steps for this particular project. Lastly, maybe just a few words on where, what you can expect from either one. So first, we don't see really a project design as complete until we've consulted with the communities, right? And we are here to make sure that your advice, along with your Indigenous cultural values, are built into the final plan. So true consultation means not just completing an exercise like this one, but coming back and making sure we've got it right. So we cannot guarantee that a project will satisfy everyone all the time, but it is our goal that everyone can say that they had an opportunity to weigh in, and everyone knows that they were heard, and that we meet our own standard of efforts to make sure that happens. So I think with that, I'd like to remind you that in addition to our telephone presentation, you can also access our live presentations at www.idea1engagement.ca. And we encourage you to follow along online if you are able to. So following our presentation this evening, we will provide you an opportunity to ask questions to our project team that are on the call. So, and we encourage you to submit a question by pressing 3 on your telephone at any time. So we really appreciate having you join us to learn more about the Chattanooga Lakeshore Transmission Line project. And we look forward to getting to know you better, a little better, and having a meaningful and hopefully engaging dialogue. So I'm going to now turn it over to Sarah Jane Soulière, Senior Advisor, Indigenous Relations. Sarah Jane?
Miigwech, Daniel, and welcome to our invited guests from Chippewas of the Thames First Nation, Caldwell First Nation, Wapakal Island First Nation, Kettleland Stony Point First Nation, and Omgenung First Nation for joining us on the line this evening. Sarah Jane Indigenakaz, Lekamakong Unceded First Nation in Dojibwa, Senior Advisor, Indigenous Relations at Hydro One. I hope everyone is keeping safe. Before we get started, we're going to ask our first polling question for the evening on page 1. The primary importance of the polling questions this evening is to inform and frame future discussions and engagement on the project going forward. Eric, can you ask the first polling question?
I can do that, Sarah Jane. If you're following along online at www.hydro1engagement.ca, you can go to slide 1 by hitting next slide, and using your touchtone phone, you can indicate your response on the following question. Which criteria do you feel is most important to take into consideration as a part of this project? If it is protection of vegetation, wildlife, and or water bodies, press 1. If it is archaeological assessments, press 2. If it is the protection of Indigenous cultural land, cultural values and traditional land use, press 3. If it is the class environmental assessment process, press 4. So again, which criteria do you feel is most important to take into consideration as a part of this project? If it is protection of vegetation, wildlife, and or water bodies, press 1. If it is archaeological assessments, press 2. If it is the protection of Indigenous cultural values and traditional land use, press 3. If it is the class environmental assessment process, press 4. Sarah Jane, back to you.
Miigwech, Eric. Now let's turn to today's agenda on page 2. Tonight, I look forward to introducing you to the Chatham to Lakeshore Transmission Line project and walking you through some of the project details. As we look to build new infrastructure in the region, learning about the communities we are working in, understanding their needs, and creating opportunities to collect feedback and advice is important to us. Tonight is the first of many opportunities we will have to connect and hear from you, whether you have joined us as a First Nation leader, community member, employee, business owner, or simply have an interest in the project. We know you have local insight, knowledge, and advice that is important for us to consider. As you will learn this evening, a key piece to our project planning includes collecting feedback from First Nation communities, elected officials, community members, businesses both small and large, and associations. While we couldn't be with you in person tonight, we wanted to ensure we could share information with you and give you an opportunity to ask our team questions. We look forward to working together as trusted community partners. Throughout my presentation this evening, I will review the class environmental assessment and our proposed route alternative, how you can participate in the process, and some of the steps and milestones. During this time, I will be referring to the presentation deck, which can be viewed online at www.hydro1engagement.ca. These materials will also be made available after the meeting on our project website. Following this presentation, members of our panel will be available to take questions. We encourage you to submit a question by pressing 3 on your keypad at any time. Key organizations, page 3. Before we move into the project details, I want to provide some background information on some of the key organizations in Ontario that play a role in meeting the energy needs of today and tomorrow. I will also touch on the function of these organizations as it relates to the Chatham to Lakeshore line as we move through the presentation. I will spend a few minutes reviewing Hydro One's role in the electricity system. Some of the key organizations I mentioned include the Independent Electricity System Operator, also known as IESO. They are responsible for ensuring that future energy needs in Ontario are being met. They conduct routine planning to identify where electricity growth or demand is in the province, and they work in conjunction with transmitters, generators, and utilities like Hydro One to confirm how to best address these needs. Hydro One is responsible for building, owning, and maintaining equipment that help meet the electricity demands and bring power to areas across the province. The Ministry of Environment, Conservation, and Parks oversees the class environmental assessment process and ensures potential environmental effects are considered and planned before new electricity infrastructure is built. Lastly, the Ontario Energy Board regulates the electricity market and ensures that electricity projects are carried out in a financially prudent manner that protects the interests of customers. Hydro One's role, page 4. To provide further clarity on the infrastructure we are going to be talking about today, I want to quickly review how electricity flows to your home or business. For those of you viewing online, you can follow along on the diagram. I also want to remind everyone that you may submit a question at any time by pressing 3 on your keypad. Across the province, Hydro One carries vast amounts of electricity from hydroelectric, nuclear, solar, and wind facilities over long distances through nearly 30,000 kilometers of transmission wires. These lines make up what we call the transmission system and carry electricity at a high voltage of 115,000 kilovolts, 230,000 or 500,000 kilovolts. You can think of the transmission system as Ontario's electricity highway. As electricity reaches local communities, it is stepped down to a lower voltage at electrical stations to be carried through another network of wires, which make up what we call the distribution system. You can think of the distribution system as a series of local roads. Local distribution companies, LDCs, like Hydro One, Integrys, Blue Water Power, are then responsible for safely delivering this lower voltage power to your homes or businesses. Project overview, page 5. This brings me to the Chatham to Lakeshore Line project. As Dan mentioned, Hydro One has been powering homes and businesses in southwestern Ontario for more than 100 years. We are committed to continuing to invest in the transmission and distribution system to support the region and increase the amount of available power to residents and businesses. The IESO's forecast show a remarkable amount of electricity growth in Essex County and the surrounding region over the next several years, with electricity expected to triple between 2018 to 2026 in Kingsville and Leamington alone. This growth is expected to meet the evolving needs of residents and emerging industries and businesses, including greenhouse operators. This growth was studied in the most recent electricity planning cycle for the Windsor-Essex region. As part of this process, the IESO gathered information from local utilities, municipalities, and communities. Through this process, it was determined that the electricity network must be ready to respond to this growth, and the need for the new transmission line was confirmed. As a result, in 2019, the IESO requested Hydro One to begin development work to build a new transmission line between a Chatham switching station located in the municipality of Chatham-Kent to our future Lakeshore switching station located in the town of Lakeshore. This line is expected to add enough power to the area to energize a city the size of Windsor and will also reinforce the electricity highway that I spoke of to ensure all current and new users have a safe and reliable supply of power. To meet forecasted electricity growth, this line is required to be in service by 2025. One of the first steps in beginning this development work includes undertaking a class environmental assessment, and in January, Hydro One officially kicked off this process. Class environmental assessment, page 6. So what exactly is a class environmental assessment process? A class environmental assessment, or class EA, is a planning and decision-making tool that is used to assess the existing environment and mitigate potential effects before decisions are made about proceeding with a proposed project. Ontario's Environmental Assessment Act sets out requirements for transmission line projects based on the voltage level and distance traversed. Once the need for a Class EA is confirmed, a study area is defined and alternatives are identified. Through the Class EA process, alternatives and the potential project effects for each are evaluated according to several criteria in a fair and transparent process with the objective of selecting one preferred method. Some of the key components of Class EA include consultation with rights holders, various groups and stakeholders, collection of environmental inventory, and the identification of potential effects and mitigation measures. At the end of this process, a draft environmental study report, ESR, that outlines the data captured and feedback collected is made available for a 30-day public review and comment period. Following this review period, this report is submitted to the Ministry of Environment, Conservation and Parks. First Nations consultation, page 7. In November 2019, Hydro One received a letter from the Crown to carry out the procedural aspects of the duty to consult with 7 First Nations and 1 First Nation organization for the Chatham to Lakeshore Transmission Line project. We are committed to strengthening relationships with First Nations. Throughout the development phase of the project, we are committed to sharing project information to you in your community, and through dialogue, identify and discuss issues that you may have. These discussions will contribute to route design. There will also be future corridor workshops and technical workshops for you to provide further input. Additionally, Hydro One has been offering opportunities for First Nations to be involved during environmental surveys and assessments such as monitoring. First Nation participation, page 8. In addition to participating in environmental studies, Hydro One is open to explore and discuss other ways to participate in the project. We will ensure proper resources to conduct consultation with your community meaningfully by making capacity funding available. We are currently offering this funding to all identified First Nations. As part of the funding, there is the opportunity and capacity for each First Nation to hire a community consultation coordinator. This role is intended to allow for a full-time position employed by the First Nation and will serve as a liaison between the community and Hydro One to help coordinate local community engagement related to the project. Hydro One supports business opportunities within First Nations. We are committing resources for developing Indigenous-owned business relationships, including sharing procurement information. Hydro One is also committing resources for employment and training as well. How we got here, page 9. As I mentioned, we began the Class EA for the Chatham to Lakeshore Transmission Line project in January this year. Prior to beginning consultation, one of our first priorities was to identify the study area and technically feasible routes for how we could build the new transmission line from point A, our Chatham switching station, to point B, the future Lakeshore switching station. Our team mapped out known technical and environmental features and constraints, such as water bodies, dense residential areas, environmentally significant areas, and looked for opportunities to parallel linear infrastructure and utilize existing easements. Based on that information, our design experts developed three viable route alternatives and associated variations. Project routes, page 10. The map on the slide shows the three primary routes and their associated variations. Whether you are currently viewing the presentation online or not, I encourage you to visit our project website at www.hydro1.com/Chatham-2-Lakeshore. Again, www.hydro1.com/Chatham-2-Lakeshore, where you can access an interactive map and locate each of the proposed routes relative to the area of interest. Each of these routes have similarities in that they allow us to connect to both electrical facilities. They have known technical and environmental constraints and are similar in length. One difference among these routes is that two of them, the red and yellow lines on the map, partially parallel some of Hydro One's existing infrastructure, while the third route, the purple one, does not. As part of the Class EA process, we will evaluate and compare each of these route alternatives to select a preferred route for the new transmission line. Before I continue, I just want to remind everyone to submit a question at any time by pressing 3 on the keypad. Evaluation of routes, page 11. So you may be wondering how we will evaluate each of these routes. Since beginning the Class EA process in January, we have begun meeting and having conversations with First Nation communities, elected officials, interested organizations, and property owners. Over the next several months, our focus will continue on studying and learning more about each route by collecting data from a variety of sources, such as existing reports and plans, conducting environmental field surveys and technical assessments, as well as holding a wide range of engagement opportunities, which I will speak to further in the presentation. This feedback and information will help us categorize the existing environment throughout the study area along each route, develop a set of criteria used to evaluate the various route alternatives, and identify potential means of avoiding, mitigating, or restoring environmental effects. This information will be taken into consideration to select a preferred route for the new transmission line, which we expect to present to the public in early 2021. Evaluation criteria, page 12. A key focus at this stage in the Class EA process includes developing our evaluation criteria, which we will use to assess and compare the alternative routes. We will be evaluating each alternative according to four primary categories: natural environment, social economic environment, First Nations cultural traditional land use, and technical cost. Each of these categories, we will establish a specific criteria, and each criteria will be assigned certain weighting. This slide includes examples of a criteria we would consider using in each category. For instance, under natural environment, we would consider assessing the impact of each route to existing vegetation or water bodies. We will use feedback received through this process to consider which criteria should be incorporated and weighted more heavily than others. If you have any ideas on what criteria or metrics you think we should use, we encourage you to let us know. How to get involved, page 13. Consultation and community engagement is a top priority for Hydro One. As I've mentioned throughout this presentation, we want to ensure that your feedback is built into our project plan. We are interested in hearing your input to help us understand the existing environment throughout the study area and along each route. Help develop the criteria we will use to evaluate and compare each route. Help identify potential ways to avoid, mitigate, or restore environmental impacts from the project. We will continue to collect input on an ongoing basis, and over the next year, we will host additional opportunities, which you will see on the next slide, like this evening, for you to participate in. We also encourage you to connect and or submit your questions or comments with our dedicated team who can be reached at indigenous.relations@hydro1.com. Again, that's indigenous.relations@hydro1.com. In addition, our team is always looking for ways to strengthen our partnership, including identifying ways the project can benefit your community. We will seek to explore local training and labor opportunities and support community partnerships that encourage safety training and safe play. Project milestones, page 14. Before we turn over to our questions and answer portion of the meeting, I want to conclude with reviewing some of the key milestones and timelines for the project. As I mentioned previously, we are seeking to select a preferred route as part of the Class EA by early 2021. We will be looking to host our next information session this fall, at which time we will share our findings and feedback received to date. This will be followed by a third information session held in early 2021, at which time we will expect to present the preferred alternative and how we arrive there. Feedback collected from these sessions and through our data collection will be compiled into an environmental study report, which we expect to release for public comment and review next spring. These key engagement milestones will be accompanied by routing workshops with technical agencies, presentations to First Nation communities, municipal council, and interested organizations, as well as individual meetings as requested. Following the submission of the Class EA, Hydro One will seek an additional approval from the Ontario Energy Board as part of our Section 92 application. Contingent on these approvals, we anticipate we will begin construction in 2023 to support the region by having the line in service by 2025. Before we move on to the questions and answer part of the session, we have one more polling question on page 15. Eric, can you share our next poll, please?
I can do that, Sarah Jane. And yes, if you're following along online at www.hydro1engagement.ca, hit next slide to go to slide 15. And using your touchtone phone, you can indicate your response on the following question. What project information would you like to learn more about in future engagement sessions within the community? If it is project's need, press 1. If it is the technical route selection process, press 2. If it is Indigenous business opportunities, press 3. If it is employment and training opportunities, press 4. So again, what project information would you like to learn more about in future engagement sessions within the community? If it is project need, press 1. If it is the technical route selection process, press 2. If it is Indigenous business opportunities, press 3. If it is employment and training opportunities, press 4. Sarah Jane, back to you.
Thank you. We will now move on to the live question and answer panel on page 16. As I'm sure some of you are eager to ask questions of our project team, we will now move to the second portion of our meeting where our panel members will address questions we receive by email as well as take live questions. As a reminder, on the panel this evening, we have Daniel Charbonneau, Senior Manager, Indigenous Relations, Sunny Karen Akron, Director, Strategic Projects, John Chadwick, Manager, Environmental Services, Andrew Louis, Real Estate Coordinator. Miigwech for taking the time to tune in today, and I look forward to continuing the conversation with you. Bamapi. I will now turn it over to Eric to ask our first question of the evening.
Thank you, Sarah Jane. We do have our first live question coming up now, and I do want to also remind everyone that if you would like to ask a live question, you can press 3 on your phone's keypad at any time over the course of the session. So again, press 3 on your phone's keypad if you would like to ask a live question. We now have Joe, who's joining us live on the session. Joe, welcome. Please go ahead.
Yes, I'm referring to page number 10. There is 3 alternate routes, but actually there's kind of like a 2A, 2B. I would like to know what the cost comparative is for each of the routes.
Thank you, Joe, for that first question. Andrew, is this a question that you can assist Joe with?
Sarah Jane, I think this question may be better answered by Sunny, if that's okay, Sunny.
Yeah, absolutely. So thank you very much for the question, Joe. I think it's important to recognize that we are very early in the actual development stage on the project. You can see that the team has put together 3 alternate routes that are shown here on slide 10 with its associated variations. And there's a number of factors that we're going to consider as part of this. Trying to accurately peg costing at this point of the project, we just simply wouldn't get the degrees of accuracy to reflect it. We do take cost and technical criteria into account, but it's not the only factor that's used in determining the final route. In fact, it's I believe it's one of 4 criteria that are actually used. And there are various elements that can impact the cost, even in a specific route. And until we get some further information about particular land types, crossings that we are going to encounter along the way, other infrastructure that requires perhaps a variant or a different type of design on a structure, turning structures, deviation points, and so forth. You can see there are a multitude of things that go into developing up the accurate pricing that would be needed for the final solution. So at this point in time, we couldn't speculate really on the price differentials between the 3 routes and the associated variants that are there. But I can assure you that these will be analyzed as part of the actual selection criteria. And it's part of a weighted criteria along with many other factors that are non-cost indicated elements that are in there. I hope that's answered the question for you. Thank you.
Thank you. And Eric, can you please share the next question?
I can do that, Sarah Jane. And I do want to remind everyone that if you have a live question you would like to ask on the session this evening, press 3 on your phone's keypad and someone will take your name and place you in the question queue. Now, we do have some previously submitted email questions that we're going to go to. The first one being, has consultation with First Nation communities started?
Thank you, Eric. And Daniel, can you please answer the next question?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you for the question. Consultations with First Nations communities started, I would say, just late 2019 in December. So we, IJOONE, I think as Sarah Jane mentioned in her presentation, IJOONE received the duty to consult delegation from the Crown back in November 2019. And I think shortly after December 2019, IJOONE sent a first sort of official notification letter to all 7 First Nations that the Crown has identified for consultation purposes, plus 1 First Nations Indigenous organization. So in December, we sent that first notification letter, and I think pretty much every month, in January 2020, we sent the another letter for commencement of the environmental assessment process. And every month after, we have, a continuing communication with all the First Nations communities that we are consulting with. And basically is to share more information on the project, offering capacity to further engage and participate in the project. So consultation has started and is continuing as we speak. Thank you for the question.
Thank you, Daniel. Eric, do you have another question?
We do have another previously submitted question. And again, a reminder to everyone listening in that you can press 3 to ask a live question. The next question is as follows. What is the design criteria for the new transmission line?
Thank you, Eric. Sunny, can you please answer this next question? Thank you.
Sure. Thank you for that. So the new transmission line itself has to meet a number of specific technical design criteria. At a very high level, it needs to operate at 230,000 volts. It's got to be double circuit in nature and got to be capable of transferring 400 megawatts of power. The line itself, depending on the structure types that we choose to utilize based on the surrounds and the environment, could be a lattice tower design, could be a monopole style steel pole design, could be a guide structure. It's just designed to meet the certain constraints that we're going to meet along the actual route once it's selected. Once we've further determined and defined the project through its development stage, we will be in a better position to determine what the correct solution of structure is. And this would then lead into what the width of the right-of-way and so forth would be. Typically, for projects of this nature and lines of this nature, we would expect the right-of-way to be anywhere between 130 to 150 feet in width. So there's a number of other factors of design reliability and so forth that come into play, but that will come out as part of the detailed engineering on this. Thank you very much for the question.
Thank you, Sunny. Eric, can we please have the next question?
We have another live question coming up now. And again, a reminder to everyone to press 3 on your phone's keypad if you'd like to ask a live question. We now have Lisa joining us. Lisa, welcome. You're joining us live.
Thank you so much. My question is in relation to the poles that have been conducted. Can you tell us how they're being used by Hydro One, any and all uses of those poles by Hydro One? P-O-L-L-S, not P-O-L-E-S.
Thank you, Lisa. And could I have Don take this next question, please?
Hi, Lisa, and thanks for the question. Yes, our intention is to basically, by asking those polling questions, to receive some input, and that would help inform some context as to understanding what some of the key perspectives are from the participants. It is just that, an early indicator of interest. Of course, we don't want individuals to be limited to that type of feedback. And as was mentioned throughout the presentation, we have four different evaluation categories, socioeconomic, natural environment, First Nations traditional uses, land uses, and technical and cost criteria, of which we would like to hear from individuals about the perspective of those criteria and how we could apply them and their respective weightings and what things that could be kind of sub-criteria to make those up. But in terms of the polling questions, it was really to get a feel for what was maybe of primary interest at the early stages with the first engagement touch points tonight. Thank you for the question, Lisa. And we will be happy to get back to community members on any results from those polling questions as well.
Thank you, John. Eric, can you please share the next question?
I can do that. And again, another reminder to everyone joining us to press 3 on your phone's keypad if you would like to ask a live question. We now have Joe joining us on the line. Joe, welcome. Please go ahead.
Yes, you. Thank you very much. On slide number 10, you had said that there were a number of factors that were in consideration, you said that there were four criteria that were going to be evaluated on. Could you share what those four criteria are?
Thank you, Joe, for that question. And I will turn that over to John to answer this question, please.
Thanks, Sarah-Jane. And thanks, Joe, for the question. It's a nice segue, actually, from the question that was just asked. So the evaluation categories are the ones that we just touched upon. And if you refer to slide 12 in the presentation, those are the evaluation categories with, and you'll see bullet points under each category. So those categories are natural environment, socioeconomic environment, First Nations, traditional land use, and technical and cost factors. And what we've done in that slide is just give some examples of, you know, things that could comprise sub-criteria for each of those categories. And that's really what we're interested to hear from individuals back on, is to say, you know, how should these be defined? What's important to your communities as it relates to these criteria? So of course, tonight, and we want to acknowledge and thank you for your participation from all the communities participating tonight, but your say is not limited to First Nation traditional land use. Of course, we hope and want to receive that context, but we invite you to provide any relevant information and help us further characterize the environment that we're studying in any of these four evaluation criteria. So thanks again, Joe, for the question. And hopefully that clarifies for people.
Anijo, does this answer your question?
Yes, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Miigwech. Eric, can you please share the next question?
I can do that. And we have another just quick reminder to everyone, if you'd like to ask a live question, please press 3 on your phone's keypad. Another previously submitted question via email was, are there opportunities for First Nations participation for environmental studies?
Thank you, Eric. John, can you please answer this question?
Yes, thanks, Sarah Jane. Certainly there are opportunities for First Nation participation in the environmental studies that will help contribute to the class environmental assessment process. So we welcome and encourage that participation. This can include things like community field liaison monitors during the studies, such as archaeological assessments, natural heritage surveys, and the like. And we're committed to sharing those opportunities with communities as we move along. We're also, as Sarah-Jane mentioned in the presentation, looking to provide capacity funding for community consultation coordinators for each community as we go through the process. And we think that that will be an effective way to have a direct line of communication and create opportunity. And of course, further to what I just mentioned about the evaluation categories, First Nation and traditional knowledge and land use will comprise an important category for consideration during the EA. So thank you for the question, and we look forward to receiving your input.
Thank you, John. Eric, can you please ask the next question?
I can do that. And again, a reminder for everyone to press 3 on your phone's keypad if you would like to ask a live question. We have another previously submitted question. It is, will there be training and jobs offered to First Nations?
Thank you for that question, Eric. Sunny, can you please answer this question?
Sure, absolutely. Thanks a lot for the question. Indigenous peoples are a very important part of Hydro One's workforce, and Hydro One as a business is committed to increasing the representation of qualified Indigenous employees as part of the Chatham to Lakeshore project, but right across the levels of our workforce. Part of this is we've offered capacity funding agreements to First Nations to support in the participation on the project consultation work. This includes capacity for each First Nation to hire a community consultation coordinator. In addition, Indigenous economic participation will form an integral part of the delivery of this project, and accordingly, opportunities will exist for training and skill development and employment. So yes, definitely is the answer to the question. Thank you.
Thank you, Sunny. Eric, do we have another question in queue?
We do. This is another live question. For everyone joining us, you can also press 3 on your phone's keypad to ask a live question of your very own. We're going to go now to Denise. Denise, welcome. Please go ahead.
Okay, am I on there?
Yep, please go ahead, Denise.
Okay, I just want to know if any of these lines are going through the Pine Ridge Provincial Park, or are they proposed to go through the Pine Ridge Provincial Park, because that is unceded territory, and that would be a big issue. So I can't tell from the maps, like they're not overlaid.
Ani, Denise, and Paul, or sorry, John, can you please take this next question?
Sure. Thank you, Denise, for the question. My understanding is that it is not going through Pine Ridge Park, and we'll certainly take your information down, Denise, and get back to you specifically as it relates. Just checking out our online interactive mapping while we're talking here, and actually I think I've spotted it. So no, we can confirm that it's not going to be affected. And if I understand correctly, Pine Ridge Park is about 100 kilometers north of the study area. So we can confidently say that no, it will not traverse Pine Ridge Park. Thank you, Denise.
Thank you, John. Eric, can you please ask the next question?
We do have another question that has come in via email. Again, a reminder, if you'd like to ask a live question, you can do so by pressing 3. This question came in via email is, will there be herbicide use at any time of the project?
Thank you, Eric. John, can you please answer the next question?
Sure. Thanks, Sarah Jane. As we are still in the early planning stages, it's unknown at this time whether and to what degree herbicides may be considered for use if required. Typical examples of when it could be used as a tool would be to eventually control incompatible vegetation below our transmission lines for safety purposes and reliability. But again, that is one tool that can be used in times of need. We do acknowledge the potential for concern regarding the use of herbicides, and we're committed to being transparent in our approach in that regard. So if it's later determined that we do need them in the building of the line, they must be planned in accordance with integrated pest management standards by trained technicians, and they respect existing limitations such as setbacks from water bodies, for example. So we will continue to evaluate that, and we're committed to providing updates on that information. So we'll be happy to advise communities of information like that if interested when we further confirm that type of information. Thank you for the question.
Thank you, John. Eric, can you please share the next question?
I can do that, Sarah Jane. Again, a reminder to everyone joining us, if you have a live question you'd like to ask, please press 3 on your phone's keypad at any time. Now, we have another previously submitted email question. This one is, once a route has been selected, does Hydro One plan to purchase the land it needs or get access through an easement?
Thank you, Eric. Andrew, can you please answer this question?
Yeah, not a problem at all. At the conclusion of the route assessment, Hydro One Real Estate will be working closely with all directly impacted landowners who have the preferred right-of-way on their property. Our goal is to secure voluntary property settlements with those impacted landowners using what we call land acquisition compensation principles. These land acquisition compensation principles are founded upon Hydro One's recent experience and land acquisition programs for nearby transmission projects. We do look forward to working with each and every one of the directly impacted landowners. And with respect to land rights, Hydro One does offer a choice to the landowner in which an interest in the form of an easement can be granted to Hydro One, or the directly impacted landowner may elect to sell fee simple ownership rights of the transmission corridor to Hydro One. I hope that answers your question. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Andrew. Eric, do we have any additional questions?
We have another email question that I'm going to share. And again, a reminder to everyone joining us to press 3 on your phone's keypad if you'd like to ask a live question. We're going to go now to this email question. Will there be potential business opportunities for Indigenous-owned businesses?
Thank you, Eric. Sunny, can you please answer the next question?
Sure. So thank you for the question. Part of Hydro One's procurement practices is to incentivize the use of Indigenous businesses in the delivery of our projects. This ranges from the supply of temporary and permanent works materials to be incorporated into the project, as well as engagement of construction and ancillary services to successfully execute the works. We're still at a very early stage of selecting our delivery methodology on this project, but it would be expected that a project of this nature would be developed with the use, would be delivered, sorry, with the use of an EPC contractor. Part of our procurement consideration of the EPC contractor would include the quantum of Indigenous business and labour that's engaged in the delivery of the project. So definitely, yes, there would be potential business opportunities for Indigenous-owned businesses. Thank you for the question.
Thank you, Sunny. Eric, do we have any additional questions for this evening?
There's another email question that we have now, and it is, will Hydro One incorporate traditional knowledge in environmental studies?
Thanks, Eric. John, can you please answer this next question?
Sure, and I'll pass it over to Sunny and Dan as well. But from the class environmental assessments process, we recognize the challenges of a time like this, and we're all, as Dan mentioned in his intro, going through them together, and just want to reiterate that Hydro One as a corporation is here for you, and whether we're a distributor for you, if there are any concerns as it pertains to your billing or what, we'd like to hear from you and work with you to help through this difficult time. As it pertains to project schedules, I'm going to pass that back over to Sunny, but from a class environmental assessment process, we are committed to trying to navigate that water of working both with moving the projects and opportunities forward while respecting everybody's challenges during this time, especially the communities that are experiencing travel bans are in shutdown mode still. So we certainly respect that. And we're using opportunities like tonight to try to augment and supplement, but not replace future opportunities when we can meet and discuss things in person. So with that, I'll pass it over to Sunny and Dan to provide some more information.
Sarah Jane and Eric, may I ask you to please repeat the question to me?
Eric, can you please repeat that question again?
No problem, Sarah Jane. So the question is, will Hydro One incorporate traditional knowledge in environmental studies?
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought that was a question about COVID-19.
Thank you. Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Oh. Okay, my apologies. Yep. So absolutely, traditional land use and traditional knowledge will be incorporated into part of the class environmental assessment. If you refer back to slide 10 on the presentation, slide 12, sorry, my apologies. If you go back to slide 12 on the presentation, you'll see that one of the four example evaluation criteria there is the First Nations traditional land use, and this is where the traditional knowledge would come into play. And so absolutely would be considered as part of the evaluation criteria in the class environmental assessment.
Sarah Jane,
thank
I
you.
Can just add some input into that as well. That absolutely we are, as Sunny just mentioned, planning on integrating traditional knowledge within the environmental studies. We're, as was mentioned earlier, to the point that we've allocated a significant portion of the root evaluation framework to be specific to First Nations interests and things like traditional knowledge and land use. And we understand the importance of considering First Nations interests and this knowledge in the decision-making process, such as things like where to root the line. So we're committed to continuing that conversation and learning more about from community staff and governments to determine the best ways to incorporate that in our evaluation. And we look forward to hearing more from you on that. So thanks for the question.
Thank you, John and Sunny. Eric, do we have any additional questions this evening?
We have another live question that's come in now, and it's coming up from Denise. Denise, welcome. You're going. You're live, so please go ahead.
Hi, Sarah Jane.
Hi, Denise.
Hi. My question is pertaining to the medicinal plant. Will Hydro One be utilizing Indigenous people to walk the proposed lines to see what medicinal plants will be affected and to mitigate how those plants will be preserved? Like if they have to be rescued, and how are they going to be rescued, and how will that take place?
Miigwech, Denise, for your question. John, can you please share information with Denise regarding the traditional plant use?
Sure. Thanks, Sarah Jane. Thank you, Denise, for the question. As was mentioned earlier, Indigenous participation in monitoring is important to us, and we certainly invite Indigenous monitors during survey work. With respect, some of that information would certainly come out in the natural heritage surveys that our consultants will be doing. And as we mentioned, this feeds into an evaluation of the various routes, what we will eventually end up with is a preferred route alternative. And that's where we're really thinking about, where there could be impacts to, say, removal of any vegetation, although, that's going to all come together in the design. But I think certainly we would like to further that conversation and offer up to understand the perspective as it pertains to that, once that preferred alternative is selected, and assessing whether any medicinal plants could be impacted and how we could potentially harvest those. So I hope that answers part of the question, but something like that, it's a bit early, I think, in the perspective of trying to look in a, maybe how to identify and protect ahead of time. We'll look at that both at the evaluation stage, but certainly once the preferred alternative is there. On past projects, we've worked with community members to identify vegetation and medicinal plants that were important to the communities, and finding a way to mitigate them proactively and harvest those and seeding other areas. So we'll certainly please continue to connect with us on this project, and we'll be committed to work with you to ensure those type of interests are taken into account.
Miigwech, John. Denise, does this answer your question?
Yeah, I just want to keep making sure that medicinal plants are included in environmental assessment processes.
Wonderful. Yeah, absolutely,
yes,
Denise.
Thanks. And it's a great perspective that we're happy to take that as feedback and talk about including that perspective into the evaluation criteria and consider that in the context of the criteria that you use to evaluate in terms of, what is the proportionality of medicinal plants among the routes, so that we're considering that in selection. And like I mentioned, once we have the preferred alternative, then avoiding or mitigating accordingly. So thanks again.
Thank you, John, for that that answer. and Miigwech, Denise, and Joe for participating on the call this evening. And we look forward to working with all the communities that that we are engaging with. And so now I'd like to turn it over to Daniel to share some closing remarks.
Thank you, Sarah Jane. I just want to thank everyone for taking the time to join us this evening to learn more about the Chatham to Lakeshore Transmission Line project. So I was just speaking on my behalf, on behalf of our team in IJO 1. I just appreciated having the opportunity to hear directly from you tonight. So if we were unable to answer your question, I encourage you to get in touch with us by contacting us directly at, there's an email address here, invidnis.relations@ijo1.com. So that's invidnis.relations@ijo1.com. Or we do have a phone number you can use to reach us, out to us. The number is 1-647-241-0495. Again, 1-647-241-0495. So as we have mentioned throughout tonight's session, your feedback is an important part of the planning and development process for the new transmission line. So as we continue development work for this new line, we look forward to working with you within your community when it's safe to do so. So just a chi miigwech to everybody, and good night. Thank you.
As mentioned, if you still have any questions or concerns that you would like to share with the project team, you can do so by emailing us at indigenous.relations@hydro1.com or by calling 1-647-241-0495. Again, you can share your questions and concerns by emailing indigenous.relations@hydro1.com or by calling 1-647-241-0495. Thank you again for everyone joining us this evening, and take care.